Welcome to this midweek media session of Talking Hoosier Baseball. I am Carl James. Today is Wednesday, April 6th, 2022. The media today got an opportunity to meet with Coach Jeff Mercer and to discuss the season so far, preview the Purdue series, and specifically discuss pitching, which Coach went massively in depth on. It's actually quite a very good listen, so here you go.
Is there a set sort of, I guess, plan for what relievers would go to follow Perkins and follow Bremer then?
Normally kind of the same couple guys, Holderfield, Tucker, Stahl, Kraft is normally in that mix of those guys. So, we feel good with Holderfield and Tucker. We also feel good with Kraft and Stahl in those situations. Kind of depends, you know, if we need the breaking ball, you know, Kraft's the guy that can go to the breaking ball. If we go, you know, left, right, left, or left, left, or whatever it is. And we want the big breaking ball, we can go to Kraft. If it's more of a righty situation in the mid innings, we can go to Holderfield because he can get to both sides of the plate. He's a ground ball guy. And then, you know, Tucker can throw to both sides. So if we need a breaking ball to a righty, you know, we'll go to Stahl like we have kind of in the past. And then we'll figure out kind of what we have and then go to on Sunday, you know, so obviously the Sunday game. Whatever we feel like is the best kind of opener or starter for that, then we'll make that decision based on who's thrown before that.
A couple of days to digest the opening Big Ten weekend of the season now. What kind of positives can you take from the weekend and hope to apply this weekend?
Well, I thought the real positive was kind of a response and the way that we competed on the mound, especially last night. We had four or five starts in a row there that were, I felt like were competitive and good starts. And then Sunday, we didn't get that. And so to be able to get back out yesterday and get those guys back out on the mound, I thought that was kind of the positive, kind of the response from that over the course of or of the weekend. So take that, and then the way that the offense just continues to battle. They show up every day and have good at-bats. They've done that. I think we've scored multiple runs in the ninth, the last couple games in a row, or eighth or ninth, and did it again last night. So I think those are probably a couple of positives from it. And then, you know, a guy like Evan Goforth stepping in and playing really well. And you just start to kind of see bright spots as you go through. And, anytime that the team begins to from top to bottom, compete the way that you expect them to, the first thing is an attitude and a demeanor. And then a belief that you can go out and execute, whether it's on either side of the ball. And then your body can follow from there. And for us on the mound, it's a big deal. And we showed that. So I'm excited kind of for this weekend to kind of see those guys take the next step.
Would you say there's any you've talked a bit about the stuff that the pitchers have,
yeah.
And then obviously we're looking at location and pitchability. Is there any point in development in which those two things are in conflict?
That's a great question. I think any time that you have, not any time, but you kind of have, it's a new wave, it's a different generation where you have so many guys that spent so long in the training environment. And you know, for those guys, for our guys specifically last year, having spent so much time in the training environment and not as much time in the competitive environment, there is a transition, the application of it. And I think there's probably some of that happens in general. I know that, you know, with Coach Glant worked out the fall, you know, I watched those guys execute pitches through the course of the fall. Actually, our pitchers led the hitters for the majority of the fall. I watched those guys execute pitches in the winter. I watched those guys do that in a controlled environment. And so it wasn't like it was in conflict in the sense that we were had the free bases or some of the stuff that was happening in the preseason or in the fall. It was more of like the application in the competition and in live settings with fans and you know, we had a very, very competitive fall. We actually kind of changed the way that we did things in the fall. If you were here, it was rather rowdy. We were doing a lot of different things trying to create an environment that would replicate what it would be like in a game because a lot of those guys hadn't pitched in those kind of environments before. So I don't know if the training environment was in conflict to it as much as it's like the inability to truly create what the environment would be like, and then your kind of initial reaction when things don't go our way, and how do we respond to that, and how does our confidence respond to that, and then, you know, when our confidence is a little bit shaken, do we try to overcompensate by just throwing it harder and throwing it better, and then we lose control a little bit, and then you hit a guy and you walk a guy, and then you're in the middle of the plate because you're trying to overdo it, and that ball gets tagged. I think that's more of what you've seen is the stuff is fine, the execution of the zones was fine. It's just when you get in the fray, how are you able to control and compose yourself and to be able to still hit those locations and those quadrants like you did in the training environment. So, yeah, I think any time that you have some of the outcomes that we've had, you go back and you analyze everything, look at everything. I think, you know, all through your coaching career, you make adjustments as you go. Obviously, as a hitting guy myself, like, I've made multiple adjustments as you go along the course of time. And so you could always look back and maybe tweak things here and there. But I don't know that it was a direct conflict in the way that we were training in one way and the game was in a complete different way. I think that the environment changing probably caused a little bit of that. Confidence gets shaken, and then you're kind of on your heels a little bit. And so, yeah, there's adjustments you can make that we worked on making to make sure it's more game-like as much as we can. But at the same time, it wasn't. I don't feel like it was a direct contradiction from the way that they were trained necessarily.
Just
a
very quick point of follow-up.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm getting at here is would you say that, you know, like, for example, I'm throwing this as an example, you know, a guy increasing the spin rate on a specific pitch, does that make that pitch harder to locate?
It's a great question. There is probably some truth to that. There probably is some truth to that. Probably. I mean, just in all honesty, probably. Like, if it's a, you know, I think, you know, Dustin said we have, they came out with one of the, he's a numbers guy, right? So he said we have 3 of the top 25 sliders in the country. It's like, that's great. Like, what do you do with that? What do you do with that pitch? So, you know, you have to be able to execute that into a zone and a quadrant. And you're right, like, There may be some truth to, are you able to command your increased arsenal, your better stuff? Although, again, I you know, the other side of it is I've also watched those guys do that too. So, I'm an honest guy. Like, I'll tell you the truth. So, I have seen those guys land them and locate them and get them where they want to get to. I think sometimes the big thing that I see, and as I've worked with, to spend time around the pitchers, is like your visual cues, right? So, you know, we were throwing today earlier with some of those guys in live at bats at practice, and if my visual cue for, we have a couple guys that have terrific breaking balls, terrific cutters, right? So if my visual cue is to start at a righty's hip, and in the heat of the moment, I look at the glove and I throw it to the glove, I still have a great cutter, but now that cutter's down and away consistently. I know my visual cue is to start it at the batter's front hip, but in the moment, I get a little bit reluctant to literally do what I'm trying to do, and I revert back to looking right at the glove and throwing at the glove. So I have a great pitch, it's just ball one. And now I'm in a 1-0 count, now I'm not as confident with that pitch, now I throw a fastball, and it gets hit, as you know, the kind of the rest of it. So that's what I see a lot more of, is like, oh yeah, that's right. That's my cue. I have to actually commit to that cue in the moment when things are, you know, are heated. Or, you know, if I, you know, one of our guys has a really good two-seam, and when he kind of gets a little bit sped up, he'll lose feel the two-seam. Well, the immediate cue is we have to now go to the four-seam, right? That slows us down, that gets us a little straighter, gets us back in the zone, and it's been 2 or 3 weeks in a row when things got going a little bit, he'll forget to go to the four-seam. So you have to call time and go out there, but remember, the ball's running too much on you, you're losing it, like, let's get back to the four-seam. It's a young guy, you know, and they get sped up. So that's the big thing, is trying to get guys to be problem solvers in the moment and not be emotional. So there probably is some validity and truth to it. Whereas if the pitch didn't move as much and my visual cue wasn't right because I was emotional, it wouldn't be as big of a deal because it kind of spun in the middle of the plate and it wouldn't miss by 2 feet. So I think there's probably, the truth probably is in the middle of all of those things. But the big thing that we've tried really hard is to make sure that when we do get in those moments of competition, and it's not in the controlled practice environment, to make sure that we stick to our cues and that we commit to those pitches in the way that they've been coached and that way that we've executed them with success in the past, and to do that consistently in the game and not get away from the fundamental basic piece of how it's taught. It's probably the best answer I can give in all honesty of kind of what I see behind the scenes on a day-to-day basis.
Is that also a double-sided sword where if a guy has a really, you know, high spin rate pitch, that your two catchers behind the plate or two incoming faces, you know, hasn't really had as many bullpen sessions with guys? So is that where, you know, saw 2 wild pitches last night? And
Yeah. And in Pete's defense, he hasn't caught in a couple of weeks, and obviously bullpens and those things. But, yeah, that's a real thing too, right? When we do have good stuff, the ball does move, and you have essentially, literally, an entirely new pitching staff. You have an entirely new catching core, and they don't have you know, Calvin Hopkins was here for, you know, for 2 years with all, you know, with all four or five of those pro arms that they threw together every day for 2 years. And, you know, Tommy Sumner pitched for 4 years here. I can remember when I was the coach at Wright State watching the Indiana-Purdue midweek game on Big Ten Plus and watching Tommy pitch, because I remember, you know, going through the recruiting scene and seeing Tommy. I remember watching him pitch as a freshman in midweek against Purdue. And so, you know, those guys have thrown so many, and they had such a relationship together. Obviously, when Ryan Feinman was here before, he caught literally every day for 4 years. So, yeah, that's a reality. That's a real thing. Comfortability, and knowing when guys miss, where do they miss, how do they miss, comfortability. And we've had several times where, you know, signs get crossed up. I know they know the sign system. I know they know the how to get to it. But it's like, can I get to it with a runner on first and second after I just walk the guy and give him a base hit and things get going and all of a sudden I get crossed up? So we've had several cross-ups, and you know, we're working to get those guys to be able to control themselves and slow down. But you're right, it is a new staff and it is a new catching court and a lot of young dudes out there doing those things. And as uncomfortable, as difficult it can be at times, as a coach, your job is to coach and your job is to teach and slow down. And you know, there's no point in me being terribly emotional and throwing a fit, because I remember when I was a freshman and a sophomore. I remember when I was a young guy doing it for the first time, and I remember doing some silly things myself, and looking back and being like, man, oh man, like if I could go back and do it again, I would do it differently. And they'll grow and they'll get better, and that's what gets me happy to see is those guys starting to come through some of that and getting better and pitching through some of those moments and not allowing them to get away from us. And that growth will lend itself as we go through the season, obviously, into the future. But I think your point is very accurate as well.
Josh Pine has had quite a coming out party this year so far. What have you liked from his approach at the plate, in the field, and how do you hope that spreads to the rest of the squad?
Yeah, I love Josh. And I didn't even know how much I would love Josh in the fall, because he missed almost the whole fall. You know, the thing I was actually talking about, this funny you ask, I was talking with one of the coaches about Josh this morning. And Josh played for a great organization out of Indiana when he was younger. Great organization, really good friends with the guys that run it. And his last year or so, he decided to go play on a team in Florida, right? And he asked about it, and everybody was fine with it. He's kind of wanted to get out and go, you know, play on a different arena, right? He just got out of kind of the normal circuit. And not that it was better or worse, it was just different. So, you know, Josh went out and had to meet all new people, had to go have a totally different view of life and all those different things. That was probably really helpful for him. He missed the fall, and then it was in, I remember having a meeting with him at the end of the winter. We were kind of talking, and I was like, listen, I don't know if you're going to redshirt or hit third for us. Like, all I know is, like, you have to get to work. You're underweight, you're not strong enough. And I said, do you know what a cot is? Like a bed, a cot? I'm like, you need to rent one and put it in here in the fitting facility and not leave here. I told a couple of guys that. And he did. He literally did that every day. But Josh is a very hard worker. But Josh is tough. I mean, intrinsically in his heart and soul, like, he's a tough kid. Linton, multiple sports. You know, he loves the outdoors, hunting, fish. Like, he just grew up tough. He was racing motocross bikes and stuff, and that matters. Like, what's in your DNA matters. And so when I remember, you know, after the Clemson series, he texted me that night and he was like, I'm gonna be honest with you, I was scared. And he's like, and I kind of freaked out. He's like, but I'll be a lot better after this. I promise that won't happen again. And after that weekend, he's really taken off. But I think that attitude, that confidence, that work ethic, he exudes all the time, and now is more vocal about it. And I've really encouraged him to be more vocal with that whole freshman group. I've told him, you're not freshmen anymore. You're not young guys anymore. Like, you're the foundation of the program now and forward. Like, today, you're our best players. So to be vocal and to be communicative and to be confident, I think that's a big deal. So those are things I see with Josh. And he is talented. Like, he is a talented player to begin with, but the competitiveness and his fierceness makes him a really good player on top of just having God-given ability.
We have time for maybe two more.
Coach, you mentioned Purdue earlier as well. Just back when, even when you were at Rice State watching a rivalry game, you know the guys better than anybody in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
What's the mindset in the clubhouse heading into the rivalry weekend?
It was really exciting. You know, I felt like after the game yesterday that the guys were in great spirits. They knew we had played a better game overall, a more competitive game all the way around. And that was what we always talk about. I want to win. We all want to win. But the way that we compete, the way that we were a ground ball away from that being a tie game there in the eighth. And so as you kind of go forward, and I've talked to those guys, growing up an Indiana kid as I did, you know, this is a huge deal. It's a huge deal for the folks of Indiana, right? You're in one of the great rivalries in all of the country. It's, you know, North Carolina and Duke and Michigan, Ohio State and Indiana, Purdue. You get to be a part of something that matters to the 6.5 million people in the state of Indiana, like nothing else. And whether you're from the state of Indiana or you're not, you're a Hoosier now. And the pride that comes with going and competing in that series against that school, and it means a great deal, and it should to us as well. And so they're excited. They're excited because it's another conference weekend, but it's also the Purdue weekend, which is a big deal. And they want to go out and compete and represent Indiana the way that we should be represented.
You're always trying to steal bases when you can, but just looking, you know, into the conference schedule, saw a team last year like Nebraska that was really heavily aggressive on the base pass and really took advantage of that. Yeah. Last night, we saw Bobby Whalen in the leadoff spot. Guy's been, you know, leading the team in stolen bases. So is that sort of a focal point moving forward?
With Bobby or just running the bases?
I guess both.
Well, last night I did it honestly just because I wanted to give TD a day off, and so Bobby was just the easy choice to slide into the leadoff role. Yeah, we want to run the bases when we're given the opportunity to run the bases. We always talk about kind of with our new school leads. Have you seen kind of the jumps? It's a low risk, high reward. And Carl, you mentioned it once or twice. We've had some guys kind of break the system a little bit and get picked, and that can be frustrating at times. Obviously, for me as well. But you know, it's a very effective. When we do it right, it's very effective, and it's very hard to contain. But we want to be athletic enough to where we can steal bases, because if you've watched, when our offense has been at its best, that's been a part of the offense as a, not a focal point, but as a complementary piece to the ability for us to, we always talk about hit strikes hard, manage the fastball, take your walks when given, right? Put the ball in play with two strikes, and then the ability to steal bases when given those chances. And so, it'll continue to be a part of our game. You can't force it when you don't get it. Sometimes guys just kind of run haphazardly and run into outs. I don't want to run into outs, but I always liken it to the layup. Like, you take the layup. If you're on a fast break and you get a layup, take the layup. You don't have to stop back out and pull up and try to shoot a fadeaway three. And so if a guy's a 1-1 to the plate, fine. Like, you've already diminished his ability to throw this best stuff. So he's 1-1 to the plate. We're going to be out. Let's not force the hand. Let's create some movement. Let's get a ball in derby. Let's do something. But you've already diminished his ability to throw his best pitch where he wants to, because he has to be so fast at the plate. Now we get a 1-3, 1-3-5. We're in the range for our new school lead. We start to get to 1-4 to 1-5 at the plate. Now we can go old school and straight steal. So any variation of that is giving our hitter an advantage, or it gives us an advantage in moving to scoring position. And that's the focal point of it, is the base running is to complement that we allow the hitter to get a better pitch to hit by splitting the focus of the pitcher. And that's happened a ton. You know, Matt Ellis has been the beneficiary of a lot of crippled pitches because Tyler Dones or Bobby, especially Bobby, because Bobby right in front of him, because Bobby's on base and in action, and that's when you see Matt hit a homer or Matt hit a double, is because he gets pitched so well, especially when no one's on base. That's how, like, the first pitch of an inning, right, where he's homered a bunch of first pitch of the inning. But outside of that, he gets pitched so carefully because they can focus when there's nobody on base. When Bobby's on base, mistakes get made, and then bang. And that's the point of the base running.
That concludes this weekly media session of Talking Hoosier Baseball. The Indiana Hoosiers start the Purdue series at Friday at 4 p.m. That will be weather-dependent, and currently the weather is not looking great for Friday. If there are updates, we will get them posted on various IU-based social media as we have access to that. So once again, thank you for joining us. We will see you at the BART.